Hello everybody and welcome to the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola. Oh, also, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, all of that. It is, of course, Christmas. Hopefully, people are getting some well-earned time off of work to either celebrate the holiday or just to spend time with friends and family. That's also what we're doing because I'm not actually here right now. I'm off celebrating too. So what we've decided to do is to take a look back at the last year, but theme it in a particular way. It's been a rough year. I think we can all agree on that. And so as we close out the year, and especially on this particular day, I thought it would be fun to look back and look at a bunch of clips where we have fun at Trump's expense. And so that's what we've got, a couple of those for you. We're gonna be starting off going way back to January 11th, when Brett Ehrlich joined me in studio to talk about Trump's press conference down at the border, where he was talking about the wall, the materials it will be built out of, and how he thinks medieval technology is awesome. Enjoy. Donald Trump has now mostly completed his photo op down in McAllen, Texas, and he spoke. Arguably, debatably, it was speech. Noises came out of his face and they communicated something. What they communicated to me was that his brain is now the consistency of tapioca pudding. And we're gonna show you some clips to demonstrate that concept. So first, this is, he's got it a little bit together in a couple of these clips. So first, here is his him talking about the wall, how they have iterated on the design based on the demands of the Democrats. Here is the president.
We're going to build a powerful steel barrier. They didn't want to use concrete. I said, okay, I'll use steel. It's stronger. It's also more expensive, by the way. But it's stronger. I'll use steel. So we'll call it a steel barrier. Now people should be happy. They said concrete. We don't want a concrete wall. I said, that's okay. We'll build a steel wall. I like it better if you want to know the truth, Ted. And we'll call it a barrier instead of a wall. And I'm okay with that, too. I don't care what you call it.
That could have ended with, where am I? And it would have been totally consistent.
When is home? How are this?
So we're gonna build a great barrier. They didn't want concrete, so they probably wanted wall, because I assume what I got from them was that their issue with the wall was that it was concrete. So we're gonna do steel, which is better, it's stronger. You're gonna say more expensive. Yeah, it is more expensive. I like it better though. Steel's good.
It's just
I like
so steel. Weird.
We'll call it a barrier, not a wall. Why do people care what it's called? I don't care. I like calling it a barrier.
It's pretty so good. Strange. It's all over the place. So he has his dot. Throughout his life, he has kind of carved out this all-encompassing philosophy of negotiation that is conveniently consistent with him just kind of being a numbskull. You know, so it's. It's, never let them know exactly where you're coming from, throw nebulous concepts at them. Well, that's also what you do if you're not good at that. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I've heard conflict. I love in the middle of it when he says, if you want to know the truth, it's like, I do.
I would love to.
That sounds like a great plan. Yeah. I'm not going to get it from you, especially if you say, at this point, now you're going to tell me the truth, which you're kind of admitting that you have been lying, but we
it's
didn't
like
need
them,
to admit that.
Keeping them honest segment from Anderson Cooper.
Right, it's like, shouldn't that be the...
What were you doing before?
We were keeping them lying.
I don't mind it so much.
So we just wrapped keeping them lying. Now it's time for keeping them honest. No,
switching
I like,
it up.
Anyways, and then the other thing is, so what am I supposed to get from those times when you've told us that the steel barrier that you can see through is what your own border patrol people have advocated for, so because that's more functional for them. Yeah. And this was a speech given after an earlier point where we had already seen images of someone having sawed through your steel wall with a saw.
Yeah. Well, look, he's loose with language. So when he said he would build a see-through wall, what he meant was a saw-through wall. it's tense is troubling for him sometimes. And also, I like your description of his negotiating strategy. So he has said, in fact, he doesn't like he's not going to announce back during the campaign what he's going to do in Afghanistan, because then the enemy will know their plans, which that's a good step. You don't say what you're going to do, but the next step, next level thinking is don't know what you're going to do. Oh. Then no one can figure it out.
Yeah. So
anyway, we got
like
more video
plausible
though.
Plausible deniability. I just want to say about the steel before you go forward. In the long term, I think this is the next step of his strategy is to, he knows it's a last ditch effort to get his wall or not get his wall. He is saying the word steel over and over and over again, which is synonymous for Pennsylvania, over and over and over again. So when this wall finally gets shut down, then he can go back and say, Pennsylvania, I wanted to bring money to this state and they told me no.
Yeah, yeah. No, that theory, we will know that that's true if one day he's saying it's going to be a steel wall, the next day it's going to be made of orange peel.
And then coal.
Yeah. Okay, so look, that was a little bit bad and weird and rambling, but not really worse than anything he normally says. Check out this.
They say a wall is medieval. Well, so is a wheel. A wheel is older than a wall. And I looked, and every single car out there, even the really expensive ones that the Secret Service uses, and believe me, they are expensive. I said, do they all have wheels? Yes. Oh, I thought it was medieval. Older than the wall, you know that? And there are some things that work. You know what? A wheel works, and a wall works. Nothing like a wall.
A wheel works, and a wall works, and well, wheels wall in, well...
And you know, those wheels that we have now are made of the same material as the original wheel. It is. I don't know, I've seen a cartoon on the Invention commercials, the Invention Hotline commercial, which is a carved giant metal circle.
Well,
and that's it, we only today only use medieval inventions. That's actually when he cuts off innovation is
medieval.
The original lever, inclined plane, and wheel.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Wheel wells and then there's white wall tires. That's confusing because it's a wall with a wheel. And it's
that is
the craziest person who has ever been obligated to have an audience.
It's weird because it's so expensive, but it's also free association.
Exactly. Look, we're joking and everything. That's just a crazy person ranting. And people are looking at them. And it started to remind me as I watched more of these clips of the Kanye West thing, where you remember, like, he went to the White House and he was saying a bunch of crazy things. And then some people were saying, at what point are we just laughing at mental illness? That, like, Kanye West clearly isn't well. So when we're laughing at what he's saying, we're kind of laughing at the fact that a person is not right.
This isn't mental illness. This is his appeal, which I've said before, which is the kinds of things that people say at work when they're complaining. And it's those little turns of phrase, quips, such as a wheel's medieval. You say we shouldn't use wheels. Gotcha. But people's first priority is to be able to say gotcha. And if the person who is their, you know, their banner for saying things, like where they get all their information, has a little quip. It must be a good quip, so I can just repeat it. Boom, I got it.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. If you like the wheel thing, he's got you. There's nothing that you will not accept from him.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Trump is a laughingstock, but we can't ignore the fact that for millions of Americans, they believe some kind of crazy things that they've been told about who he is and how he started off, how he got involved in business and the sort of education that he had, something that he likes to brag quite a bit about. And so earlier this year, we delved into the actual evidence we have concerning Donald Trump's education, and here's what we found. Donald Trump loves to brag about his education. He went to Wharton School of Finance, University of Penn, great institution. And he brags about it constantly as an example of how he is a genius, a very stable genius. In fact, there's a few issues with that as well. And it really cuts to the core of the myth of Donald Trump. Who is he? Why did he end up where he did? And what happened along the way? Now, there's some other examples of this. Before we get into his education and the new stuff we figured out thanks to the work of Michael Cranish at the Washington Post, we know that how he got started in business is just a big old lie. He says that he was given a small loan of $1 million, which actually works out to $413 million in today's dollars. That's what he actually got. Leaving aside the fact that if you were to get a $1 million loan, that's significant and would allow you to start businesses that the vast majority of American people don't actually have access to that sort of resources. But that's the business stuff. We also have why he wasn't Staff Sergeant Trump in Vietnam, because he got a number of educational deferments and then bone spur deferments, which we know were made up. He doesn't have bone spurs. He never had bone spurs in the same way that he never had a small $1 million loan from his father. But now we also have some information about that whole Wharton thing that he loves to talk about. So look, for decades, he's cited his attendance there as evidence of his intellect. And he says that it was, quote, one of the hardest schools to get into, the best school in the world, calling it, this is an actual quote, super genius stuff. I think that if you ever say the phrase super genius stuff, you can't claim that you're a genius at that point. But he proceeds. And the interesting thing, though, is that for all that he loves and has for decades bragged about going to Wharton, he's never really like proven that he did well there. He talks about it. And so we're gonna talk about the evidence that we do have. He, remember, by the way, questioned the academic standing of President Barack Obama, but has never released records showing how he got into that school or how he performed once he got there, even though he's big on other people's records. He's big on other people's paperwork. And so now we have this guy Nolan. So James Nolan had worked in the Office of Admissions at that school when Donald Trump was being considered. And he says that he witnessed family pressure from Donald Trump's family, who was already at that time rich and well-connected in the area, putting pressure on the admissions office to let him in. It wasn't Nolan's decision to let him in, it was Nolan's boss. Now Nolan's boss is no longer around, he's not living to testify to exactly what happened. But he said that there was a lot of pressure put on the dad to let him in. But the thing is, that's not really the end of the story, because if we look at Wharton now, it seems like, well, it's super hard to get in there. So it is a big question. Did they put pressure on the admissions office to let him in? But the thing is, that's today. Admission standards were not the same 50 years ago, back when Donald Trump was trying to get into college. In fact, Nolan attests to this, saying that at the time that Donald Trump was trying to get in, more than half of applicants to Penn were accepted. And transfer students like Donald Trump had an even higher acceptance rate based on their college experience. A Penn official said that the acceptance rate for 1966 was not available, but noted that the school says on its website that in 1980, it was still slightly greater than 40%. Today, yes, it's like 7.4%. It's like a lot of Ivy League schools, very difficult to get in. But that wasn't really the case back then. And so to some extent, the myth of the educational attainment, not to say anything about the school or whether it was good or not, but it was much easier to get in back then. I went to UConn, it's no University of Penn. But it was a lot easier to get in when I got in than even now. That's something that we're seeing basically across the board. And Nolan sort of summarizes, saying it was not very difficult, talking about the time in 1966 when Trump applied. I certainly was not struck by any sense that I'm sitting before a genius, certainly not a super genius. Yes, there are no mutant powers of cognition there. But the thing is that this is actually important, because as soon as Donald Trump got out of Wharton, he and his family used his time there to sort of present himself to the national stage as this big up-and-comer who is going to change things. A 1973 article in the New York Times said Trump graduated, quote, first in his class from the Wharton School, and then quoted his father as saying, quote, Donald is the smartest person I know. It's a guy who didn't get around a lot, I think. The claim that Trump was the top student was repeated in a more widely noticed 1976 profile in the Times, again including his father's quote about being the smartest person. So not only did he go there, but he was the best in his class. And this is just a general note for journalists, whether you know back then or today, a dad saying that his son is smart is not necessarily like, that's not source material for an article. Yeah, you're proud of your kid, I guess, okay? There's more interesting stuff about Donald Trump's family history. You could talk about that perhaps, but the fact that he's proud of him, not necessarily the most important story here. What is interesting though, is that they keep citing that he was the top in their class, even though no evidence was presented at the time or since that is the case. And also when you look at the evidence that is available, it really pokes some holes in the story. Trump's name was not among the top honorees at his commencement. He wasn't on the dean's list his senior year, meaning he wasn't among the top 56 students in his graduating class of 366. The only thing we can say for sure is that Trump received at least a 2.0 or a C, enabling him to graduate, because he did graduate. Although with the history of his family getting involved to make sure that things go well for him, can we really even say that with any sense of assurance? And yet, starting in 1973 and on, he was the top in his class, even though no evidence was provided of that, and the evidence that's available shows that he wasn't even in the top 10-20 percentile in his class. Now, I'm not gonna include references from students that had been there at the time about the fact that he was a bad student, he was lazy, never read a book, all that stuff, because honestly, it's to some extent anecdotal, it's interesting, but there's a lot of people that hate Donald Trump. And so I'm gonna stick with the hard evidence rather than people's account at the time, but note that those accounts are out there and there's not a lot of accounts to the contrary. And the thing is, like that was decades ago, but Donald Trump has stuck ever since saying, I'm a genius, my access, my presence in Wharton proves it. And so you would think the fact that there are these lingering questions about whether he actually did achieve what he said he did, that you would want to provide the evidence that is available. Now, we can't just go to Wharton and look at his GPA or his record, that there's confidentiality, we can't do that. But he could access it today if he wanted to. If he wanted to post scanned copies of his records on Twitter, he could do that. But not only is he not doing that, but they have gone to extreme lengths in recent years to make sure that nobody else gets access to it. During his 2016 presidential campaign, his personal attorney, Michael Cohen, who would eventually end up in jail, threatened colleges with lawsuits if his academic records were released. Now, the thing is, we can't say for sure that if you're willing to sue someone to stop your records from getting out, that that means your records were bad. But you're a reasonable person, right? I like to think of myself as a reasonable person. Would you sue someone to stop your straight A's from being revealed to the world? Maybe. Maybe if you were one of the most humble people in the country, you would do that. But if I were like to create a list ranking Americans on humility, my wrist would give out before Donald Trump's name would appear. And so it seems far more likely that they were deathly afraid that the truth would be revealed, a truth that would undercut a more than half century long attempt to portray Donald Trump, one of the most vigorously, enthusiastically stupid people in our country, as some sort of super genius stuff. And so look, as I said, it's out there. He could release it if he wants to, but he's probably not gonna listen to me. I will instead refer to one of the only people in the country that Donald Trump actually respects, who said, let him show his records. That was Donald Trump talking about Barack Obama. Now, we don't have the obvious racist motivation in this case, but questions do remain. And so it's on Donald Trump at this point. I'm saying you have what seems to be a verified record of being a dummy. It's up to you to fight back against that. Donald Trump is a living embodiment of the Dunning-Kruger effect. This thing where your ignorance in an area makes you ignorant of the things that you're ignorant about. And when you combine that with confidence, it can lead to not just ignorance, but also a resistance to actually learning. And we've got the ultimate example of that for you now. Donald Trump had a meeting with some Chinese trade officials and his own trade official, who tried as hard as he possibly could to get Donald Trump to understand a very simple concept. And Donald Trump, in real time, proved his unwillingness to do so.
Will the MOU be a long-term deal? How long would your MOU stay?
I think the MOU is going to be very short. short term. No, we expect to go into. I don't like MOUs because they don't mean anything. To me, they don't mean anything. I think you're better off just going into a document.
An MOU is a contract. It's the way trade agreements are generally used. People refer to it like it's a term sheet. It's not a term sheet. It's an actual contract between the two parties.
Yes.
A memorandum of understanding is a binding agreement between two people.
By the way, I disagree. I think that a memorandum of understanding is not a contract to the extent that we want. We're doing a memorandum of understanding that will be put into a final contract, I assume. But to me, the final contract is really the thing, Bob, and I think you mean that too, is really the thing that means something. A memorandum of understanding is exactly that. It's a memorandum of what our understanding is. But to me, the contract is, the real question is, Bob, so we do a memorandum of understanding, which frankly, you could do or not do. I don't care if you do it or not. To me, it doesn't mean very much. But if you do a memorandum, how long will it take to put that into a final binding contract?
What? From now on, we're not using the word memorandum of understanding anymore. We're going to use the term trade agreement, all right?
Okay. Right.
No more. We'll never use the term again. We'll have the same document. It's going to be called a trade agreement. We're never going to use MOU again.
Are they going to put that into another agreement?
What we'll have will be a trade agreement. That if we cross, we have major hurdles. I don't want to put the cart in front of the horse. Assuming you decide on an agreement, it'll be signed by the two people. It'll be a trade agreement between the United States and China. We're not going to use it.
I like that much better. I like that term much better.
Do you agree with that?
That was an epic effort by Robert Lighthizer, U.S. Trade Representative. But dude, if you want to get Trump to understand what you mean, you have to go over and you have to twist his ear and say, shut up, little boy, and let the adults speak. So that was insane. I mean, maybe this is kind of an aside, but I feel like if you've never really understood what mansplaining was like, that I think is what it's like to hear someone who knows nothing about this thing talking to a person whose life it is and telling them, no, I think what you really mean is this. And so Trump-splaining is very much a thing. Also, hashtag Dunning-Kruger. Go watch the video that we did last week on the Dunning-Kruger effect, because that was the greatest demonstration of it that I've seen in my life. So much so that take a look what happened. So this is about Chinese trade with China. And so when he said, I disagree, so he goes off on what a memorandum of understanding isn't, because he neither understands it nor memorandums it. Then there's a big explanation of what it actually is. And he responds with, I disagree, said a scowling Trump, causing the top Chinese negotiator to laugh at him because he doesn't know what he's talking about and he just had it explained to him. So this is an issue that supposedly, as president, Donald Trump cares a lot about and knows a lot about. In the campaign, he was saying he talked constantly about trade and how much he knows about it. But he apparently knows less now than he did then, if he knew anything at all at that point. So look, I will attempt to be, and I understand this breaking my promise because I promise never to be fair to Trump. I will try to be a little bit fair. There are contexts outside of world trade where a memorandum of understanding does mean something less than a binding contract, hypothetically, in some areas. And it's possible that in his life as a private citizen who has been sued many times, he has had to come across these sorts of things. But he's been president for literally years now at this point. He's talking to his chosen trade representative who understands this legal process better than he does, better than I do, better than any of us does. So defer to the person with the knowledge on very specific things like this. But he can't do that. He thinks that he knows better than all of those people, whether the topic is trade with China or ballistic missile technology or whatever. He is always so sure of himself, and his brain is so packed full of self-assurance that there's no room for either knowledge or the curiosity necessary to generate new knowledge. So there's that. On a very specific issue, the memorandum of understanding, they literally have to back off of a term in the White House from now on because he has proven that he will never understand what it means. But it goes deeper than that. It goes more fundamental than that. And so now I turn to Janet Yellen, so former chair of the Fed, former official under Donald Trump, asked on Marketplace, the BBC's U.S. radio partner, if she thought the president had a grasp of macroeconomic policy. Janet Yellen replied, no, I do not. Now, let's be very specific about what she was asked. Not could he teach a master's course on macroeconomics, not does he rise to the level of some of the great economic minds of our time, it's does he have a grasp at all about the fundamentals
of macroeconomics? And she says, no, I do not. And she says, specifically in terms of his relationship with the Fed, I doubt that he would even be able to say that the Fed's goals are maximum employment and price stability, which is the goals that Congress have assigned to the Fed. And she goes into a detail about why she believes he fundamentally misunderstands what the point of the Federal Reserve is, saying, when I continually hear focus by the president and some of his advisors on remedying bilateral trade deficits with other trade partners, I think almost any economist would tell you that there's no real meaning to bilateral trade deficits, and it's not an appropriate objective of policy. Now, look, there's a lot that I would disagree with Janet Yellen on, but on this fundamental truth, not only do I agree, I have been making this exact point for like 3.5 years now. When he talks about the trade deficit specifically with China, he is not talking as a person with sort of a different perspective on economics. Like, I come at it from a progressive point of view, he comes at it from a conservative point of view. There are people where we would have that disagreement, but that is not the disagreement between myself and Donald Trump. He comes at it from the point of view of a poorly socialized four-year-old. He doesn't know what it means. He just thinks that if the deficit is in their favor, they're winning. Not in some specific macroeconomic context, but just in the sense of, I don't want to be beat. I don't want the US to lose to them. And I refuse to go even one inch further than that and try to understand why there is the trade deficit that there is. And that it is not some sort of thing where there was two negotiators, an American and a Chinese negotiator, and the Chinese negotiator just beat us. It's reflective of consumer habits on the American side and the Chinese side. These are large-scale things that are gradually shifting over the course of decades. They're the collective decisions of tens or hundreds of millions of people that are determining this bilateral trade deficit. It's not a thing where he can just butt his head against them and get his way. And when you have someone who approaches some of the most important trade issues of the day from the perspective of someone who has literally never heard about it, never learned about it, never thought about it, then God only knows what he'll end up doing. And we've already seen the fallout from some of the tariffs that he's put up. He doesn't understand what effect they would have on the industries that he purports to want to defend. When we generate more money by the tariffs, he doesn't even understand who's paying that. He doesn't get fundamentally years into his first term that we're the ones that pay for that. China doesn't do it. I do, you do, the people purchasing the products do. And he really seems to think that he can dramatically shift our buying habits in the course of just a year or two. Maybe long term, something like that might happen. But for now, we are paying to the tunes of literally billions of dollars every year because of his misunderstanding of these fundamental economic truths. Now, the reason that I point out these two cases with Robert Lighthizer on the one hand and Janet Yellen on the other is not just to laugh at the president. That's one reason, and it's fun. But that's not the only reason. It's because these are incredibly consequential misunderstandings where his stupidity and his ignorance now affects not just his life, not just whether Trump vodka or Trump steaks goes under, but whether we go under, whether our country goes under. How will our economy do? To the extent that any president can determine that, he is doing it. And it is an almost universally negative fashion when it comes to world trade. There are experts who get things wrong. Brett and I are actually, we're in the initial stages of a possible book about the history of humans getting the most important things wrong in different fields. So you don't need to defer on experts on everything. And people have agendas. But on basic truths, like what a memorandum of understanding actually is, what the point of the Federal Reserve actually is, Donald Trump, I beg of you, before you destroy us all, listen just a little bit to the people who have spent their lives learning about this stuff. Throughout the latter half of 2019, we've been occasionally checking in on the war of Donald Trump versus Fox News. It's been brewing. It's even had some casualties. Shep Smith is now gone because of this conflict. But I have what might have been the beginning of it, or at least its public face. And that was when Donald Trump lost it over Fox and Friends committing a cardinal sin. And that sin was just admitting that he was down in the polls to some of his Democratic opponents.
Head to head with the president, He beats President Trump by 10 points. Sanders by beats him by 6. Warren and Harris basically flat-footed tie.
Early, barely buy it. Doesn't matter.
Barely buy it. And by the way, while he is a fool, Pete Hegseth is not necessarily wrong. Yeah, he's not necessarily wrong, but you saw there, Fox and Friends is willing to at least admit that the general election polling for Donald Trump is not going so well. And it's on Fox and Friends, so Donald Trump was watching, and they knew that. So he tweeted almost instantly, Fox News is at it again, so different from what they used to be during the 2016 primaries and before. Proud warriors, now new, like the Klingons. Now new Fox polls, which have always been terrible to me. They had me losing big to Crooked Hillary. Had me down to Sleepy Joe. I hate even saying that. I shouldn't say it in the future. Even considering the fact that I have gone through a 3-year vicious witch hunt perpetrated by the lamestream media in collusion with Crooked and the Democrat Party. If you just woke someone up from hypersleep and read them that paragraph, it would not mean anything. But that's the weird world we're living in.
So you have Klingon reference and hypersleep in the same span?
I've been reading a lot of sci-fi recently. Something Skeksis. Anyway, so he says there can be no way that he's losing to the sleepy one, which sort of adds a little bit of, I don't know, it's sort of glorifying the Joe Biden thing.
So here's the thing, Donald, this is lame, how you are losing to a sleepy man. You, cranky boy, are losing to sleepy man. Mm-hmm. You should be sad. You should be distraught. They didn't make up those polls. You are losing. That is bad for you. So if anyone's lame, it's the guy who's losing to the person that you're labeling as comatose.
Yeah, and I will say, as we always say, this poll, as the wise man Pete Hegseth once said, it's really early, doesn't mean anything. That's true. Don't get complacent off of polls right now when it's still like 6 months to the first primary vote. Don't get complacent on polls the day of the election. Don't get complacent, by the way, on the results of the election, because they're likely to be contested one way or another. So I'm not really concerned about what the polls say. It's got, you know, it's got Biden up, it's got Bernie up, it's got a bunch of people up against him. What I'm interested in is all it takes is Fox briefly acknowledging reality. And Donald Trump is very publicly attacking them. And we know that where Donald goes, his base goes. And so I think that this is not only putting pressure on Fox, which is as deferential as any media outlet, I would say, outside of maybe OAN, is to any president. But it's probably going to be effective pressure. Fox and Friends doesn't want to get, you know, bombarded with tweets from Trump fans that suddenly hate them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the strategy. Mm-hmm. The strategy is to Trump to be Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer, is that what he is?
Yeah.
And then to have the Fox News be their little canine pet. Mm-hmm. And for every time they step even remotely or perceptibly or imperceptibly out of line, him to go, yeah. And this is him going,
yeah.
And that's it, and it'll work. And it continues to work. The only time it doesn't work is occasionally with Chris Wallace, who within 24 hours will go back the other way.
Which he did this week.
Also,
Shep Smith, I would say he's even more consistently.
But where's he been?
I don't know.
I don't hear it, and I don't see it. Which is possible that Donald doesn't watch Shep.
That's true.
And that could perfectly explain it.
Yeah, the only thing sort of complicating your Cesar Millan analogy is that in this case, if the dog barks, very likely he will also bark, because we know he will live tweet what they say.
Yeah.
But in any event, I would love to not have this sort of weird incestuous relationship between a major media outlet and a presidency. I don't think that we've seen anything like this in recent years, and I would love to go back to a time when we don't necessarily have that.
Trump loses it when Fox News admits reality. That is the message.
That might be the title.
But yeah, that's it. I mean, Trump loses it every time Fox slips and admits what's happening in the world.
Yeah.
And that's something, that's the message.
That probably is the lesson. It's Christmas, and Donald Trump is, of course, a Christian. And so I thought it made sense to go back to an old interview that Donald Trump did, where he was asked what his favorite verses of the Bible were, and take a look at how he responded. Evangelicals love Donald Trump. They consider him the chosen one, and he considers himself that as well. The way I know is he recently called himself the chosen one and also referred to a friend of his who said that he was like the king of Israel. But my question now is, has he even read the Bible? Here's our evidence.
You mentioned the Bible. You've been talking about how it's your favorite book. And you said, I think last night in Iowa, some people are surprised that you say that. I'm wondering what one or two of your most favored Bible verses are and why.
I wouldn't want to get into it because to me that's very personal. You know, when I talk about the Bible, it's very personal. So I don't want to get into
There's no verse that means a lot to you that you think about or cite?
The Bible means a lot to me, but I don't want to get into specifics.
Even to cite a verse that you like.
No, I don't want to do that.
Are you an Old Testament guy or a New Testament guy?
Probably equal. I think it's just an incredible, the whole Bible is an incredible. I joke very much so. They always hold up the Art of the Deal. I say my second favorite book of all time. But I just think the Bible is just something very special.
Trump fans, come on. You watch that. You think that he's read even a verse of the Bible.
Yeah, it's very clear when he says equal. I like them both. I like the new one. You gotta have a new. You gotta have the new one, but you gotta know.
Yeah,
the old
I like
one.
Old conservatives like old.
Okay, it's like so, George Costanza trending. Like he has no idea what this job is.
Like Flavin.
Yeah,
who's
yeah.
your favorite? No, it's like David Brent when his favorite musician is Beethoven, and they're like, "What Beethoven do you like?" And he's like, "Oh, all the hits, the big ones."
I'll go another Office reference. It's when name another Smokey Robinson song from The Smoke Man.
Yeah,
I love The Smoke Man. That's it.
It's one thing to be like name a verse. Okay, first of all, if you're the chosen one, you know you're the Lamb of God. You should be able to come up with something. But okay, that's hard because you have to come up with a specific thing. But when they say, "Do you like the new or old?" Just choose one and go with it.
Dude, you can't even picture Trump reading a magazine, let alone the Bible.
He doesn't even proofread his tweets. That's 140
That's
characters.
It. I didn't write it, don't care.
Yeah.
But if he thinks he's God, then we convince him that those are his words. Maybe we can get him to read it.
Exactly.
And but so,
we're gonna say.
I was just gonna say that's not their act. So this is stuff. It's like you wanna hold these people and show them as hypocrites, right? Mm-hmm. You guys are hypocrites. And you're disingenuous what you're saying.
I would like that.
Right. And you want them to say, you're right. But they're not gonna.
No, I think that by the close of this video,
dude, that was Mark
they will be
Halperin
typing emails
to put that.
You're right, John.
And it goes. I think you said it. Like this is an old video that came to light, and the reason.
Well, no, I mean it was a thing back in the day, but especially
back in the day when Mark Halperin still had
week.
A television show.
Exactly, he's not back on the
when Dropa Dope Mr. Halperin did.
Yeah,
you know.
So, but no, it's the chosen one, the King of Israel. All of the like him implying that he's got God's divine. In essence, infused
dude,
in him.
Dude, they think you kill babies, so
that's that a good point. I haven't.
It's really all it comes down to. I hate to tell you,
but look, for evangelicals, I get that they'll still think plausible deniability. Maybe next to his bed, next to the book of Hitler speeches, he's got a Bible. Technically, okay. Well, if I can't convince you with his lack of knowledge of what's actually the text in the Bible, perhaps I can convince you with the text of Trump. So, let's compare. The actual chosen one with Trump on a few issues. So let's turn to Jesus on enemies. Jesus said, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you. Trump has said, when people wrong you, go after those people because it's a good feeling because other people see you doing it. I always get even.
What's an eye for an eye?
That is like something a henchman in Spider-Man would say.
So the truth
Not
is
he just
likes the Old Testament.
He does seem to like the, run with it. Okay, there's a lot of people like the Old Testament. Not necessarily, I mean, the evangelicals tend to like the new one, you know, because the whole Jesus thing. So let's turn now to Jesus on humility. Jesus, those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. To which Trump adds, sorry, losers and haters, but my IQ is one of the highest, and you all know it. Please don't feel so stupid or insecure. It's not your fault. Hey, it's not your fault. That's nice.
He won't be humbled.
No.
It just seems like Jesus is wrong with these quotes.
So wait, you come out of these comparisons thinking Jesus was naive?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I mean, no,
I think you're wrong, but I forgive you.
School.
Because Jesus says unforgiveness. No, what are you going to say?
Yeah, well, I went to Catholic school. I know all the teachings of Jesus. Mm-hmm. I took tests on them. Mm-hmm. And they're all like, be nice to people. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. And I don't like people who are using God's house in a terrible way. Mm-hmm. My temple should be a house of prayer. But you've made it a den of thieves. Mm-hmm. Get out. That's what I remember from Jesus Christ Superstar, the musical. But
that's what you studied.
But like, that's, okay.
You were in it, I remember.
The Cliff's Notes with mm-hmm. mnemonic devices of music. But the truth is here, like all of this stuff, the evangelicals out there, they are just trying to be holier than thou. Mm-hmm. And they, built into it is this weird hypocrisy of forgiveness that is a get out of jail free card, and the you don't know his heart, you don't know anyone else's heart, and it is this everyone loves to live in a little bubble that makes them happy, mm-hmm. and they don't want you to make it complicated on mm-hmm. them. They just know that the right is the evangelical side, and I'm with them, and my individual representatives represent that, mm-hmm. and Trump is fine. I've picked my battle, and my battle is abortion, and you're a baby killer. Mm-hmm. And every time you point
We've
out what Trump
that.
Said that was kind of a bully kind of thing to say, mm-hmm. that's small ball compared to all the mutilated baby corpses.
You're saying that he does some bad things, but they can forgive him.
But that's what that's I don't agree with them by any means, but mm-hmm. that's what it comes down to. It's just hilarious to me that Trump does not know anything about the Bible, mm-hmm. and this is what he thinks is an awesome answer. It is very clear he doesn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm. So he's being forgiven even though he doesn't understand the biblical like idea of forgiveness.
Yeah.
So we'll turn now to that. Jesus on forgiveness. Jesus says, I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance, to which Trump adds, why do I have to repent? Why do I have to ask for forgiveness if I'm not making mistakes? That's evangelical, right? I didn't do anything wrong. What's the problem? I'm just gonna read one more just because it's fun.
Please do.
So Jesus on wealth. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. To which Trump adds, part of the beauty of me is that I'm very rich. Okay, I know nobody's gonna care because nothing matters and nothing ever changes. I just thought we should correct the record just a little bit, even though it doesn't matter.
True, Trump okay. does not Bible well.
Exactly, yeah, new world. So hopefully you enjoyed that little look back at the year 2019 and before through the lens of wanting to have a little bit of fun at Donald Trump's expense. We had fun recording it, and it's occasionally nice, what with how serious the news is, to just laugh a little bit. And Donald Trump does occasionally, in addition to everything else he provides for us, he does provide that. Beyond that, I hope that you're enjoying the holidays. I know that we are. We really enjoy being able to have this little break. But don't worry, if you're looking for live news, that will resume very soon. We'll be back in the studio before you know. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you on the next one. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.